This is Bill Munhausen with another edition of What Makes Sense. Once again, I'll be looking through headlines in order to get to the heart of today's issues. I'll begin with a story about American Christianity. J.P. Moreland is an American philosopher, theologian, and Christian apologist who currently serves as Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University in La Mirada, California. Moreland specializes in metaphysics, philosophy of mind, and Christian philosophy, having had his work published in journals such as Metaphilosophy and the American Philosophical Quarterly. Here is what he says about the way American churches presented the gospel. Today, we share the gospel as a means of addressing felt needs. We give testimonies of changed lives and say to people if they want to become better parents or overcome depression or loneliness that Jesus is their answer. This approach to evangelism is inadequate for two reasons. First, it does not reach people who may be out of touch with their feelings. Second, it invites the response, "Sorry, I don't have a need." Have you noticed how no one responded to Paul in this manner? In Acts 17:20, he based his preaching on the fact that the gospel is true and reasonable to believe. He reasoned and tried to persuade people to intelligently accept Jesus. Christian testimony time has become how God makes life easy for me. Moreland's thoughts certainly reflect part of what troubles the church in America. Becoming better has always been one aspect of the gospel, because accepting Christ results in deliverance from the bondage of sin. Although sin may be fun initially, bondage always ends up hurting, so deliverance eases the pain. That's why American pastors saw the pain-relieving message as the best way to draw people into the church. Moreland considers it a wrong strategy, but it's worse than that. New converts respond favorably to the message of an easier life, but the strategy lacks staying power. Eventually, the worries of life come back. Problems still happen, and questions about ultimate truth come to the forefront. Also, a new believer who merely wants an easy life doesn't tend to be a world-changing kingdom builder. The easy life is passive, not productive. So the convert drawn to the easy life either lives an unproductive existence or becomes disillusioned and returns to his former life. That's where Moreland becomes right again. The Christian message that has staying power is the truth of Jesus Christ. If you consider the strategy of Paul in the book of Acts, it was one of reasoning with people. Paul wasn't a charismatic speaker, but he had complete confidence in the fact that Jesus was the Son of God who died to repay sin. He also was blessed with a brilliant intellect to be able to explain the miracle of the gospel in convincing ways so that listeners could agree with the truth. The result of Paul's strategy was a believing crowd that was anything but passive. These believers weren't just hanging on to the free gift of salvation. They purposed themselves to share the reality that made salvation possible. First with family and friends, but eventually with the world. It was the culmination of what we call Western society. The American church has lost its way regarding truth. I was reminded recently about the period of my life when I delved into the science of origins, and I revisited an old PowerPoint lesson I created titled Many Ideas About Genesis. It traces the process of theologians attempting to reconcile their understanding of Genesis with the scientific theories of the 19th century. During those years, they invented the gap theory, the ruin restoration theory, theistic evolution, the allegorical interpretation theory, and the ever-popular theory of, I don't know and what does it matter anyway. None of these interpretations of Genesis resonated with the scientific types that theologians were trying to please. But it did convince generations of church people that there were no absolute answers regarding truth in Christianity. Better to just go along with secular science. Once the church lost the battle over origins, it began losing in every area of authority. The Church taught that humanity is all one race descended from Adam through Noah, but secular science explained that white, black, red, and yellow races evolved separately. The Church taught that sex before marriage was a sin, but the world asserts that children need to experiment as they grow toward adulthood. The Church taught that marriage was between a man and a woman, but secular people consider traditional marriage to be a social construct with no inherent reality. The Church taught that God created male and female, but leftists insist that God makes mistakes that can be corrected by gender-affirming treatments. All of these attitudes were made possible once God's role as creator was destroyed. All of it stems from Christianity losing its hold on truth. The obvious solution, then, is for Christians to proclaim what is true, even though it may be an uphill struggle to reclaim the status that was lost. As I have said in earlier episodes, we are not conservatives because there is little left to conserve. We are now reformers, counter-revolutionaries, who are restoring the truths that have been set aside and lost. I have friends who say we should pray for revival, but we are called to more than prayer. God told Moses to stand up. Bob Dylan sang, "You gotta serve somebody, either the devil or the Lord." Therefore, boldness should be our style. Throughout the Bible, God's people in both the Old and New Testaments lived in opposition to the governing authority. We see this in the rebellion Moses led to deliver the Hebrew slaves from the Pharaoh of Egypt. We see it in the many times that Jesus confronted the Pharisees, who lorded over the Jews of his day. When Jesus' disciples were forbidden to teach about Jesus, they responded by asking rhetorically, "Should we obey God or man?" The passivity of the American church has empowered the secularists who have led our fellow citizens away from the truth. It's long past time for Christians to take a stand. Now let's turn to another story, though not unrelated. Billionaire investor Bill Ackman recently said, "Humanity is on a rapid path to oblivion." He puts the blame on the tech industry and urges Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk to stop amplifying hate for dollars. Much has been said and written about the evils of social media, but maybe less has been said about the root danger. Simply put, it's the algorithms. The popularization of social media is not an accident. Its inventors did not stumble upon commercial success. Rather, the success of tech platforms is rooted in a scientific understanding of human psychology. Because people are social creatures, a Facebook like gives us pleasure, and thousands of likes makes us ecstatic. So Facebook makes likes easy to obtain. We also enjoy it when other people agree with us and share our beliefs and understanding. So social media algorithms herd like-minded people together, which amplifies each person's conviction about their opinions, which convinces many that other opinions are not just incorrect, but likely evil. So Ackman fears social media algorithms are pushing humanity towards oblivion. He blames Zuckerberg and Musk, along with TikTok CEO Xiao Chu, for stoking divisions along racial, ethnic, religious, and generational divides in ways that serve to dehumanize the suffering and deaths of innocents. Whether it is Facebook, Instagram, Threads, or Twitter X, engagement farming algorithms calibrated to feed users continual doses of outrage to keep them scrolling are helping to entrench division. Social media has been amplifying the hate for a decade as algorithms wind us up, the CEO posted to Musk's platform on Monday. Addressing both Musk's and Zuckerberg's social media platforms directly, he urged them to alter their programming code in such a way as to facilitate people finding common ground. "If we don't fix this soon, humanity is on a rapid path to oblivion, and it will be too late." The money manager reserved his greatest criticism, however, for the U.S. subsidiary of China's ByteDance, TikTok should probably be banned. A foreign government should not be in control of the minds of our next generation of leaders. The problem with any criticism of the algorithms is that they are a deliberate business model. The recommendation to change the algorithms is basically like telling a company to deliberately reduce sales. It won't be done willingly. It doesn't make sense. Furthermore, social media platforms have no rules that would moderate their content. While regulated TV broadcasters are obligated to exercise judgment when airing video footage, there is very little accountability for the content users publish on social media platforms. The disparity in journalistic standards has caused traditional news outlets to lower their own standards so they can compete with internet news sources. The result is greater journalistic malpractice, as every journalistic outlet tries to defeat the other. Governments are trying to do something about it. In Europe, a bloc of 27 different member states instituted a Digital Services Act in 2022 in an attempt to put guardrails on social media. It has now issued formal inquiries in the cases of X, Meta, and TikTok. I really doubt that there is a safe way to rein in media outlets without violating freedom of speech. What works for me personally is to make sure I hear from reasonable people on the other side of every philosophical argument so that I don't fall into tunnel vision in my understanding. People who are not like-minded help us see another perspective and challenges me to better understand my own opinion. It also helps me communicate better with people who disagree. That story is about how hard it is to go after the big influencers, but the Justice Department is better at going after little guys. The U.S. Justice Department announced that a former social media influencer has been sentenced to 7 months in prison and fined $15,000 for his role in a conspiracy to illegally influence the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. Douglas Mackey, who went by the Twitter handle Ricky Vaughn, used Twitter and other media platforms to spread fraudulent messages targeting supporters of presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. DOJ officials say Mackey encouraged Clinton supporters to vote via text message or social media, which is legally invalid, then recruited and conspired with other influential Twitter users and private online groups to assist in the effort. By 2016, Ricky Vaughn had established an audience on Twitter with approximately 58,000 followers. A February 2016 analysis by the MIT Media Lab ranked Mackey as one of the most significant influencers of the then upcoming presidential election, the Justice Department said. It's hard to believe this story is serious. In the meantime, it has also been reported that Mark Zuckerberg spent over $400 million to influence the 2020 election while he used the power of Facebook to control stories in such a way to favor his favorite candidate for the presidency. There are 3 points to make from this story. First, Mackey, alias Ricky Vaughn, had a tiny scope of influence. Secondly, his methodology to encourage people to vote by text could only have fooled extraordinarily naive people who probably shouldn't have voted anyway. And third, the offense of Zuckerberg's manipulation of the election is the far greater one. It's evident that President Trump was right when he claimed the election was rigged, although manipulated may be the more precise word. The acting Assistant Attorney General of the Justice Department's Criminal Division said about Mackey, "The defendant exploited a social media platform to infringe one of the most basic and sacred rights guaranteed by the Constitution, the right to vote." He further claimed that about 4,900 votes may have been affected. By contrast, the Zuckerberg effect was exponentially greater. Maybe a fourth point is this. If anyone claims there is no such thing as voter fraud, this story proves there is such a thing. In this case, an inconsequential influencer defrauded in favor of President Trump. We can only imagine how much fraud occurred in the other direction. Voter fraud and election manipulation is a real thing, and every American should demand investigation and reform. Now let's turn to climate change. According to a recent report, global carbon emissions from energy will peak in 2025 thanks to massively increased government spending on clean fuels in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. According to analysis by the world's leading energy organization, the International Energy Agency, the IEA, said that government spending on clean energy in response to the crisis would mark a historic turning point in the transition away from fossil fuels in its annual report on global energy. The invasion of Ukraine has prompted an energy crisis around the world, with global gas prices initially surging and steep inflation that has made households poorer around the world. Some of you out in listener land believe that world events are orchestrated by the elites to produce their desired goals. So you might think the pandemic was a test to determine how compliant citizens might be when faced with a personal threat. By the same reasoning, world elites could encourage a war if it might interrupt petroleum availability so that governments could mandate the change to electrification. All of this contributes to our distrust of authority, but regardless of whether the IEA is right about war contributing to government actions against internal combustion cars, the move to electric cars has been sudden. Unfortunately for the planners, there is growing resistance against electric cars as potential buyers weigh the cost amidst stories of $20,000 battery replacements, exploding battery packs, high purchase prices, and a new phenomenon called range anxiety. But amidst all this turmoil, questions remain about climate change itself, let alone the actions of governments. I listened to an interview which points out the number of scientists who disagree with the climate narrative.
Our next guest was once a climate alarmist, but now says the entire movement is, quote, a scam. Tom Harris is executive director of the International Climate Science Coalition. He joins me now. Tom, good to see you tonight. Now, you actually say the only way to get rid of this is to go after the science of climate change. Explain.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people will say, well, you know, Canada, for example, puts out so little greenhouse gas emissions that we shouldn't actually try to reduce it because China is double the United States. Well, the trouble is people argue that, well, yes, but we have to set an example to the world and we have to be good citizens and all that sort of thing. So they're using these arguments quite often that China's doubled the emissions of the U.S., et cetera. But the real underlying thing is that there is no climate crisis. You know, I was originally an aerospace engineer, and I would give speeches and I wrote articles. I wrote one in the Ottawa Citizen about comparative planetology, how studying the planets helps us understand the Earth better. And I used the example of the runaway greenhouse effect on Venus. I said, this could happen on the Earth if we don't reduce carbon dioxide. Well, a local professor at Carleton University, professor of geology, he liked my article so much, he used it in his course on climate change. But he said to the students, but that part about Venus is wrong. What happened on Venus cannot physically happen on the Earth, and he explained why. Now, I thought, who is this climate change denier? Well, he invited me into his lab, and he showed me the geologic history that he and others are finding, and they found no consistent correlation between carbon dioxide and Earth's temperature. At times, CO2 was 1,300% of today, and we were stuck in very cold conditions. So it was all over the board. So I started wondering, well, maybe he's right. He exposed me to a lot of people who actually showed me that there are thousands of scientists. And here's a book, actually, that illustrates that. It's called Climate Change Reconsidered. And this is on climatechangereconsidered.org. There are thousands of references here which talk about the fact that there is no foundation to the climate scare. It's all based on models that don't work.
But Tom, when you hear, you know, politicos especially, but not just the politicos, celebrities, it's settled science. Science is settled. Is science ever settled, really? I mean, except over time where you really, you know, what is H2O? We know what H2O is, right? We understand that. But is this science settled really quickly?
No. In fact, it's a very immature science. In fact, we don't even know whether it's going to warm or cool in the future. Various people who study the sun, for example, Dr. Patterson, they show that we're headed into a grand solar minimum around 2060, and that we'll see gradual cooling over the next few decades. So the bottom line is we have no clue what's going to really happen. So the only sensible approach is to get ready for it, to make our infrastructure hardened, to use solid, dependable sources of energy like coal. This is a piece of coal from eastern Kentucky. And not to turn off our solid, reliable energy sources for flimsy wind and solar power. You know, you'd laugh. It's appropriate that I'm based here in Ottawa, because right now here in Ottawa, Canada, they're running a municipal election. And it is the most corrupt election I have ever seen. God. They are trying their best to bring in a climate alarmist as mayor. So guess who they put in charge of the four debates they've had? Climate activists. They have climate activists running the mayor's debate.
Professor, it doesn't surprise me that this is happening in Canada, it's happening in the United States, and we need real facts to discern what the real truth is here. Professor, thank you for this invaluable work that you're doing.
Tom Harris points to evidence that found no consistent correlation between carbon dioxide and Earth's temperature. At times, CO2 was 1,300% of today, and we were stuck in very cold conditions. Harris is by no means the only scientist who opposes climate change alarmism, because the research is new by scientific standards, very unsettled and greatly influenced by political and financial interests. For all these reasons, we need to pause before we continue to spend billions of dollars around the world to potentially address the wrong issue. What if the real issue is a natural climate cycle that we can't change? But we drive the world's people into poverty trying to address it. Real scientists and real leaders would seek these answers before wasting resources on fruitless action. The climate change or global warming movement has been creeping up on us for the last two decades and is now reaching a critical stage. 17 states are poised to follow California's lead to ban gas and diesel vehicles by 2035 in response to climate change. The impact on commercial transport and supply changes will be devastating, and all aspects of our economy will be impacted, costing trillions of dollars. And all of this is based on faulty science. The issue isn't whether you believe this scientist or another who advocates for man-made causes. It is irrational to destroy economies and risk millions of innocent people based on a theoretical effect that very likely is beyond our control. We should not give credence to climate advocates who stand to profit from their pronouncements. And we should reject radical solutions like banning internal combustion. If you are concerned about CO2, drive a hybrid automobile that uses half as much fuel as a conventional vehicle. It will even save you money. That's a use of technology that fits your conviction without forcing others to conform. I also read an article that greatly favors hydrogen fuel for automobiles, and the writer makes excellent points. First of all, EV batteries require so much energy to produce that the resulting vehicle doesn't really save the environment. Hydrogen, on the other hand, burns to generate water, and current internal combustion cars can be easily modified to use hydrogen. Then there is the even more elegant solution to use hydrogen in fuel cells to produce electricity for vehicles without batteries, and hydrogen can be pumped into a vehicle almost as quickly as gasoline, thereby avoiding the charging times of battery electric cars. The only shortcoming is infrastructure. Just as it took time to build charging stations for battery electric vehicles, it will take time to convert gas stations to hydrogen. The bottom line is this: we've used technological innovation to transform our lives over the last century. Research is the key to make affordable and practical energy for the people of the world, and we can protect the natural environment without harming its inhabitants. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, go out and do good.